Welcome to Sundown, a podcast about art, guns, a hurricane, and the challenges of honest communication. From the heart of the Catskill Mountains in New York, our hosts, Keiko Sono and Olivia Minadasi, navigate through the complex psychology and emotions between a gun store owner and a contemporary artist as they form an unlikely collaboration to install a public artwork. We hope that Keiko's deep dive into her own mistakes and her effort to embrace them inspires you and reminds you that honesty rewards those who don't give up on it.
After Paul and I had a long conversation, I met with Chris and told him everything we talked about, including Paul's response to Chris's work, that he felt the work did not achieve the goals we set out to achieve. Chris called Paul after that meeting, and the two finally discussed topics that had been looming over the project since the beginning.
So as part of that, the piece itself too, I'm not trying to change your mind on it. I'm just actually very curious as to what your experience of it has been, or maybe was this different than your expectations, or...
I don't think it was actually appropriate for the spot, quite frankly.
Okay.
It didn't work with the locals at all. There were very few people when a store was open when they came into the store that would even comment about it, except they might have asked what was that, and I tried to explain to them some of the symbolization of it and things. But outside of that, I was working one day across the road with my tenant, and a car did stop, and he got out. He took some pictures and things and left. But outside of that, I had actually not seen anybody else, make any stops while the store was closed or anything like that. Of course, I'm not there all the time, so I don't know how many people have stopped to, take pictures at it. Or anything like that. Nobody walked around the entire piece to see, all sides of it. They just, looked at the frontal view. That was about it.
Gotcha. So were you expecting something more like that would be more of a draw in that way?
Like you had discussed in the beginning, Chris, I'm going to be, quite blunt with you and quite honest.
Please, yeah.
You had some, and I got excited about it, was some very interesting ideas about having a water feature, when it rained and come off the roof and, go through some pipes and bottles and, what have you, with some of the sketches that you had done about it until, you changed your mind and decided to make the piece, what it is now.
Mm-hmm.
If I knew the piece was going to be what it is now, I would have said no. Because I know the population, it wasn't going to work for the locals. And it hasn't at this point. So, I think the water feature idea, that would have been a little bit better, a draw. And I think it would have been a little bit more exciting. And I just don't think for this particular population here, that the piece really worked at all for the symbolization, because I feel that when you see something, when you see some type of a piece, there has to be you have to draw them to some kind of you got to focus it, for people what you're trying to say, a school crossing sign. We all know what that means, kids are crossing and it's a school zone,
Mm-hmm.
But Keiko had even admitted that maybe it would have been a good idea if she had, made up a sign or something to try to explain, what it was symbolizing so that people would be able to, their focus would have been narrowed to, okay, this is what the symbolization is, to represent.
Mm.
But I don't think the piece did that.
Right. Yeah, Keiko and I had a conversation around some of that. I mean, I kind of want to hear your, she gave me a little bit of what her interpretation of what you were saying to her, but I wanted to hear from you directly on what you thought of it in that way. I mean, it's interesting, you know, my, because my experience, she expressed that too, that she felt like in some ways from the initial sketch, the way that the piece ended up sort of, you know, got less relevant, I guess. And it sounds like you're saying something similar to that, that it was like less relevant to the place and all that. And, you know, it's funny because it's like my experience of it was like the inverse of that. It was like the total opposite. Like to me, the sketch and those initial ideas, which I was pretty interested in them as concepts when I started actually working on them, felt totally irrelevant and felt like I could just do this anywhere, you know? And then once I started getting my hands going and started and found the sand and all that,
Right.
You know, and I hear you and I respect your, obviously I respect your opinion of it and everything, but for me, it was like such a success in the way that it came together personally and artistically. You know, like the way things, I like to think that I can just really trust the process of what happens when I'm making art in an intuitive way and in a way where I'm not in control, you know, like I'm partial, I'm kind of doing a dance with it, as to use a really trite metaphor, you know, and to really do that, that means you can't dance in complete control. You know what I mean? It just doesn't work. So to kind of half let go and half trust, and then so many things came up in that piece around, and you know, there was kind of touched on political things maybe, but also to me just touched as very heartfelt personal things. And then, you know, thinking about the water and the height and everything. So, you know, I just wanted to share that, like from my perspective, and I definitely, you know, and I'm not new to this. I get the idea, like, you know, especially with making art, it's completely wide open. So, you know, there's a lot of place, there's a lot of room for risk and people's expectations being let down and all that. And I knew that going into it. But I just want to share with you, like and I feel very grateful for that on a lot of levels. One, I'm very grateful that Keiko asked, like, you know, she shared some regret with me, like, you know, oh, maybe we should have talked about it halfway through and all that. And I just said, you know, hands down, no, like, I am so grateful. And I'm grateful to you, Paul, that, you know, despite your misgivings about maybe the direction it was going, that you trusted me and let me do it. Because for me, it was like, it was very reaffirming to like my process of making art. I'm disappointed that you aren't excited by it, but I certainly understand. But I also, like, you know, I just felt like, a lot of things came together in a way that I'm very grateful for, and I'm proud of the piece.
Well, that's I'm glad, you know, that it worked out for you, you know, and you were able to achieve, you know, what you wanted to.
Wow. This was a difficult conversation. I have so much respect for both of them because, you know, they were being so honest and they were talking about something that was really uncomfortable, you know, the fact that Chris thought that his project was very successful and Paul didn't. And, you know, they didn't really hide any opinions over that, you know, and they were very honest and they had a really civil conversation about this. So, you know, it's very, very admirable.
Yeah. I found it kind of interesting that one of Paul's main critiques of this whole project, and he also mentioned it to you when you had your conversation, but he mentioned that the locals didn't really like understand it, or it wasn't really for, you know, the locals. And that's what he defined as it being not a success. But back in the beginning of the project, he kind of said the opposite. He was like, oh, this isn't for the locals. It's not supposed to be for that. And he even said like the locals don't even really come into his store that often. So it wouldn't really be for them. So I found that particularly interesting.
Yeah. This is a point of tension that's been around for a long time, at least since the 19th century, between artists' creative freedom and public expectation. I totally understand Chris's point of view, since I was also trained in the same school of thought that holds complete creative freedom and independence as the highest goal of the career for an artist. It's also the common public image of artists, that of the lonely genius. But after spending a few decades in that world, I came to question whether that image was real. Creativity doesn't exist in a vacuum. It's always a reaction to something external. And most of the time, creativity is about solving problems, making life better, and connecting with other people. Art is no different. I think art has been hijacked by the high culture art market and a huge entertainment industry. I feel like it's time to take art back to the lives of everyday people. And that, in essence, was what I was trying to do through this project. Having said that, though, I also understand and appreciate Chris's powerful pursuit of artistic expression. The two are not mutually exclusive, and I believe that there are ways to align these expectations so that we can nurture artistic freedom and folding it into a framework that benefits the community.
Yeah, I agree. Honestly, in reality, art, like we've said throughout this whole time, is a medium for really anybody to utilize. It can be used for anything. It can mean anything depending on the person. And it really shouldn't be like gatekept by like a high society, like high culture attitude. But it's a tricky like conversation overall.
And can I tell you just one more thing about Paul at one time saying that, you know, this is not really for the locals, but then, you know, he criticized Chris's work because, you know, local didn't respond to it. During the reception, one of my friends who lives just right down the road from Paul's store came by. And so, you know, she had known Paul for like decades, right? But she told me that she had no idea about any of the things that Paul talked about, you know, in our podcast and also at the reception. You know, she found out so much about him, and it kind of changed the way she viewed him in a positive way. So I was really happy about that, you know. So maybe, you know, in the beginning, Paul didn't really care about the locals, but, you know, it would have been nice. It would have been nice if, you know, more local people came in and say, hey, what is that? You know, like if that had changed his relationship with the local people, I that would have been really, I think for me, it would have been a really great result.
So the other thing I wanted to check in on, because Keiko mentioned this too, was you remember when I came into the shop, we had a little interaction around one of the signs?
Yeah.
And Keiko brought that up, and, you know, I felt a little embarrassed because I was like, oh man, it was kind of a touchy moment. Not in the moment, but later as I thought on it and when I talked with Keiko later, yeah, you know, I realized my discomfort with some of that.
Right.
And I felt funny, and I guess I wanted to connect with you and also kind of like clean up anything that might be unclean about it.
Well, like I told Keiko, and I showed Keiko, because after that, first of all, she had to remind me about it, because honestly, I just didn't remember the incident. Mm-hmm. And I went in and I looked at the sign and I read the sign, and I know that you became extremely upset about it, she said.
And well, extreme might be extreme, it did concern me.
I feel that you read into it too much. You made more out of it than it actually was to show. And the reason for that is I also brought Keiko in to read all of the signs that I had up on the ceiling. And I just wanted to show the point that there are none of those signs whatsoever point fingers at any particular race, color, creed, or religious belief, or social, economic stature of anybody. And I think you took it a little bit more personal than you should have. And I don't know why that happened, but I just wanted to tell you that those signs are not meant to be derogatory to any particular social economic class
yeah
at all. So that, you know, that was what I told her. And and the other thing is, Chris, quite frankly, delete it. You know, you didn't like the picture, then that's why you got the delete button on the camera. You delete it, and you move on. That's all. You know, we take pictures, and it's like I told Keiko, we take pictures all the time. We get some that are fuzzy and out of focus and this and that. You don't put those in an album. You just delete them.
Right, which is actually, interestingly, that is what I did. But afterwards, right. I thought, that doesn't delete my questioning. And, you know, you and I bonded and you know, I had, I'll explain this. Maybe let me back up. Like, so the interesting thing with that sign in particular, and I think the reason why it sat uncomfortable for me is because, not because it was, it could be, it left a lot of room for interpretation the way it was worded. And so that's why it kind of didn't strike me right away. And I thought, oh, this is just another one of these signs that's being like, you know, kind of aggressive about gun rights and this and that. But like you said, not derogatory towards anyone particular. But then it mentions English. And then so it could be open, but it wasn't directly saying that. So the thing that I thought was interesting was like it left a lot of room for interpretation. And so I just started questioning. That's true. I don't know Paul that well. I don't know what he means by that exactly. And I did, because I know you, and I mean, I know what I know of you, and we've, you know, gotten along. I'm thinking I was certainly giving you the benefit of the doubt. But, you know, it was mainly just because it left a lot of, it's kind of ambiguous in a way. And, you know, especially now, I feel like, you know, everyone's on as divisive as everything is politically and all that. You know, it just seemed even more so like, it just could go in other bad directions. So, which I understand, and I appreciate your clarification of it, and that feels great. But deleting the picture wouldn't change that. You know, it still would sit in me like the question of what do you mean by that?
Well, Chris, again, the only thing I can tell you is, did you ever, when your boys were growing up, and by the way, I really appreciate you bringing your family to the opening, because I think your wife and your kids are absolutely wonderful.
Thank you.
I really do. I really mean that sincerely. I thought that they were, you know, you have a hell of a nice family, first of all.
Thanks, Paul.
But getting back to your meanings, again, I think you're just reading into it too much. You know, you're making a mountain out of a molehill. And my point being, when your boys were growing up, and I mean when they were young, maybe going through the terrible twos or something like that, didn't you ever say to your kids, hey, don't you understand, you know, what I'm saying? Am I speaking Martian? Am I not speaking English? Do you not hear me?
Right.
Be honest. Have you ever said that to your kids when they were growing up?
Yeah, and that is the interpretation that after I, you know, went, I thought about it for a few minutes, I read it again, and I went, oh, that's the interpretation that you meant. And I did assume that was the interpretation that you meant, but...
And that's exactly what it was.
Yes, but see, this is, to me, this is interesting because it's kind of, it also falls into the realm of art in terms of the way things can be read. You know, if I were, you know, an adamant, you know, racist, let's say, and I could hang that sign and say, what I mean by this sign is, you better speak to me in English or else I'm going to speak to you in 12 gauge. And I sure understood that's not what you meant, but it leaves the ambiguity in the language of it. So I wasn't really reading into that and saying, oh, that's what he means or this, but it was just like that sign is, and I'm explaining this, like, this is why that one in particular struck me after I read it and thought about it, because a few of your signs were like that. They were mostly straightforward about gun rights and that sort of thing. But that one leaves some room there, and that I thought it was interesting. And to me, it's sort of 50-50. You can really take that either way. And that's not me making that up. That's like, you know, the language.
I really disagree with you on that, Chris, only for the fact that the first two words of the sign, it says, no trespassing. I mean, it's pretty simple, you know. That's the first word. It's not anything else. You know, you don't even have to read more than that. It's the first thing in the row, in the sign. And when you go down the road, you see all these signs on these trees and stuff of people's property. What's the biggest word that you see? Posted. That's it. The next words are usually no trespassing or no hunting, no fishing, no backpacking, no whatever, you know.
Right.
So, you know, I mean, I'm not going to change your mind about it. I don't need to change your mind about it. You have your opinion about it. I understand that. I respect that. But you're making a mountain out of a molehill, and I'm sorry that it still dwells on your, you know, you're still, apparently you're dwelling on this a little bit. But again, just, you have to try to move on. I mean, you know, we all see things when we go down the road sometimes, and we see signs that we don't like and this and that, and you just, oh, well, that's a person's opinion or whatever.
Right.
And you just move on. I'm sorry, sure. But it's really not any, you know, any more difficult than that.
Yeah, no, I'm not dwelling on it. I mean, I feel like I wanted clarification, and I definitely got it. And that's actually what I, you know, like I said, this is the way that I thought that, you know, the conversation would be, just in terms of you clarifying your understanding of it. And I get that, but I just wanted, it was important enough in terms of sitting in me that I wanted to honor it by bringing it up and just having the conversation. So I appreciate that.
Mm-hmm.
And we certainly can move on.
So clearly there's two perspectives on the situation still. Paul saying to just delete the picture and kind of forget about it, while Chris was sort of reading into like the possible other interpretations. And I feel like this is a classic and relatable argument of like reading into something too much versus not reading into something enough and just dismissing it as like, oh, it's nothing and it's not that big of a deal, which it just reflects to like another wider conversation that we're having as a society today. But Chris also mentioned that he wanted clarification, like he wanted to talk about it just to clarify everything and, you know, make sure that there was no bad blood between them or, you know, on the situation and make sure everything was good. But it also wasn't brought up right when this happened. They had talked about it way after everything was done. So that sort of clarification and like understanding between the two of them, or that agreeing to disagree, didn't happen right away. And it sort of just seemed to linger throughout the whole project until the end. I'm not sure if discussing it sooner would have helped or hurt, but I found it interesting that the clarification came after everything.
Yeah, this incident definitely represented the two worlds. If this sign was seen in the store among other signs, then yes, there is no problem, because just like he said, you know, you do say things like, you know, hey, can you speak English? You're not really, like, you say that to your kids, you know. I was making this into podcast. I was thinking that, I can't really put this out there out of the context of his store and just throw it in the digital world where, you know, things could really blow up. And that's one of the reasons I abandoned this podcast the first time around. I didn't really want any unintended consequences. But this conversation between Paul and Chris, where they came to understand each other, I felt that this was pretty significant and should be shared.
Yeah, I totally agree. There's definitely a lot of pressure to kind of appease everybody and not offend anyone, especially if you're putting something out into the world or into the public eye. But there's a fine line between being conscious about how you come across, or, you know, being conscious of other people and the public eye in general, and complete avoidance or like censorship of like touchy subjects or things that are considered touchy subjects or controversial subjects. There has to be kind of a balance, because you can't really please everybody.
It's true. And, you know, I mean, as a non-native English speaker myself, and I'm an immigrant, I do tend to take things from my perspective. So when I first heard about that sign, it didn't even occur to me that it would not be meant to address foreigners. And that shows the, you know, kind of a constraints of my perspective as well. So I learned something. And also, if this were to get out of his store, he should also know that this is something that could be taken in a wrong way. That's just a fact of life in this country. You know, we have to really whether you like it or not, you know, we do have to think about these things.
It's taken on a life of its own in a way where, with all the rain that we did have, of course, you know how heavy sand is when it's sure. wet. So you can see that there are certain parts of the piece that are starting to change.
Mm.
And they're
how
starting
so?
To collapse a little bit because of the weight of all the sand. And at the same time, what's really funny is you have, I guess you used a clear plastic or a clear vinyl bag, you know, a clothes hanging bag, and you filled it with sand.
Yeah, yep.
And what it ended up doing is it has actually become a little hothouse, and there's actually like two little plants growing in there.
No way. I thought that would happen.
Well, it did. It did.
Wow, that's interesting.
Yeah.
You can't keep life out, can you?
No. Oh, no. And I mean, it's interesting, and it's because it's the clear plastic, and you can see through it, obviously. You can see the little plant.
Mm.
You know, there's like two of them in there, and you could see that there's a little condensation formed in there. Of course, there must have been enough nutrients in the sand and everything to nourish them.
Yeah.
And they're growing inside the
piece. It's a little terrarium. Well, Paul, this has been a really nice conversation, and I really appreciate it. I mean, I'm glad to like get some clarity on some of this stuff, and also just like, I feel like connect on a deeper way with some of what was happening with the piece and mm-hmm. in general, you know? And again, I want to thank you. Like, you know, this came up for me when I talked with Keiko as well. And again, now is like, just how grateful I am, A, that you did the project, and B, that you were so trusting in me to move forward, especially knowing it, if you're not totally comfortable with the way the piece was going. So thank you for that.
You're quite welcome.
Great.
This little exchange made me so happy. This was the essence of this work. You know, Chris was the artist, but Paul was the one who lived with it, right? He watched the piece every day as it slowly transformed in small ways that only he could see. This was beautiful, and I really wish that I did something with a focus around that, you know? We find this out afterwards, you know, in this little conversation, but I don't know if I could have had some kind of framework where Paul could take a picture of it with his phone and uploaded it to our Instagram or something, you know? So again, you know, here's another regret.
I mean, regardless, I was glad to hear that Paul was still able to find, you know, interesting things in the piece, despite not really being a big fan of the project overall. It was a nice point of connection for both of them to end their conversation on. And I'm glad that they were able to kind of clear the air.
I agree. And, you know, that little plants growing in the plastic bottle, you know, that's kind of what it's about. It's like unexpected small life happening. I mean, for me, that's what art is all about. So, you know, I was like, okay, maybe this is just as good as it gets. And I was ready to move on. But there's one other piece that I didn't expect to happen. And you'll hear that in the next episode.
Thank you for listening to Sundown. Sundown is a production of Forge Collective, a platform for co-creating stories of the future we want to envision. For more information and photos of Chris's work and our project, visit forgeartcollective.org. Many thanks to Chris Victor, Paul and Barbara Natu, and Don Ryan and Victoria Blade for their participation, and to John Notar for the theme music. This project was made possible in part with funds from the Statewide Community Regrants Program, a regrant program of the New York State Council on the Arts, with the support of the Office of Governor Hochul and the New York State Legislature, and administered by Arts Mid-Hudson.